This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Stax Records produced some of the greatest Southern soul music of the 60s. Music by such performers as Otis Redding, Wilson Pickett, Rufus and Carla Thomas, Booker T and the MGs, Isaac Hayes, and the Staples Singers. The Stax Museum of American Soul Music just opened in Memphis on the site of the label's former studios. And new Stax reissues have been released. Here's some examples of the Stax sound. Steve Cropper was the house guitarist at Stax Records. The house band recorded their own records under the name Booker T and the MGs. Cropper also worked as a songwriter and producer for Stax. He produced some of Otis Redding's hits. I've been loving you. When I spoke with Steve Cropper in 1990, he told me he thought his strength as a guitarist was rhythm.
I never really was a lead player. I never tried to be a lead player. I've been lucky enough to have played a few solos on some great artist records. But really, I'm a rhythm man, and my best forte, I think, is capturing the feel of a song during its inception in the studio. I think that's where I'm best. Even though people fly me in all over to play on their records and overdub, I think they would be better using me on the ground floor, you know, as a building block rather than as a cherry on the cake.
That's interesting, and also that they'd be able to work off of your rhythm while they were.
Yeah, they don't think of it in those terms because either they don't know me, they just know the aftermath of some of the things I've been lucky enough to be part of. But I don't know if it's a gift or it's because I had such a love for, like I said, spiritual music in the beginning, that I have this talent that just sort of comes with finding the right groove for a song when I'm in the studio with an artist. And that seems to be the thing that always seems to make it, whether we're working with Rod Stewart. You know, I did a lot of stuff with Rod and Tommy Dowd, and I did a lot of the original stuff with Ringo and stuff, you know, when he did his solo albums and all. And those were the songs that seemed to make it up the charts, the ones that I was there on the ground for, helping the rhythm with the drummer and stuff like that.
You had your first hit with a band called The Marquees.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me about who the band was and how you made the record.
Well, originally, Charlie Freeman and I, we started playing guitar with each other, and we just sort of had fun. And he was taking lessons, and he'd go to his lesson, and I'd wait for him at his house for him to get back, and he'd teach me what he learned that day. So I was kind of cheating the system a little bit. But anyway, we just started playing different things. We did some Elvis songs and some rock and roll and stuff like that. And we had a friend who thought that we were good. Obviously, we probably were pretty lousy at the time, but we didn't know that. And he said, "I've got a friend who's a disc jockey. He said, I'd like to take you guys down there and let him hear you, you know, and we're just young guys." So anyway, he took us down to his radio show one night. The guy's name was Keith Sheriff. And we went down there, and he said, "Okay, what do you guys got?" You know, we told him we've got some songs and so forth. He said, "Well, I want to hear you." And so he put us in a studio, the two of us, and opened up a mic. He said, "Now, you know, I'm doing my show now, but," he said, "I can hear you guys." And he said, "You just go ahead and do your thing, you know." So we started playing our stuff, you know, played a couple of songs, and he motioned for us to come in. And about that time, the phone started lighting up, and they were wanting to know, who are those two guys that they just heard? And I'm going, what's this? And he said, "Well, I didn't tell y'all," but he said, "I put you out on the air." So anyway, all these people were calling, wanting to know who we were. And so he told us, he was pretty famous for his sock hops, and he'd have these sock hops every Saturday night at the National Guard Army. And he said, "If you guys get a drummer," he said, "I'll put you on my sock hop." And so we searched the school and found a guy in the ninth grade who played drums, Terry Johnson. And that was the first band, and we were called the Royal Spades. And shortly after that, we added Duck Dunn on bass, and we got Charlie Axton on saxophone, and Wayne Jackson on trumpet, and Don Nix on baritone, and formed the group The Marquees. And we had written this song with Jerry Lee Smoochie Smith on keyboards, and wrote the instrumental last night. And I think they played it for Atlantic. Atlantic liked it. They pressed up a few copies and put it out on the radio, and lo and behold, it just took off like crazy. So that was our first success.
How old were you when you and the group The Marquees had the hit last night?
When the hit came out, I just graduated. It was the summer we graduated from high school. So I was, 19, 18?
Now, it wasn't long after that that you became affiliated with Stax Records. You became the guitarist in the house rhythm section, you became a producer, you became a songwriter with
Floor Sweeper.
Yeah, right.
Tape copier and editor.
How did you get affiliated with Stax?
Well, it started Charles Axton, the tenor player, and the funny story about Charles Axton.
He was the tenor player with The Marquees?
He was a tenor player with The Marquees. He was on the record last night and everything. He came to me and he said, "I hear you guys got a pretty good band." He said, "You know, I play saxophone. I'd like to be in your band." And I said, "Well, I'm not really interested. I don't think we're interested in adding horns to the group." And I said, "How long have you been playing?" You know, and he said, "Oh, I've been taking lessons for 3 months." And I'm going, "Oh yeah, great." You know, and somewhere in the conversation, he goes, "Oh, by the way, my mother owns a recording studio." And I said, "Can you show up for rehearsal on Saturday?" And that is a true story. Now I may stretch it a little bit, but that's an actual truth. And we went out. His uncle, Jim Stewart, the owner of Stax Records, had a little studio in his garage in Memphis, and we went out there and jammed around. And then they moved from his garage to a little place out in Brunswick, Tennessee, where they had the Satellite label. And we would go out there every weekend and play and all that. And, of course, Jim Sturt said that we never had a chance. We'd never make it. But I think he just was being devil's advocate to just see if he could push us into something. And we kept trying. We cut a bunch of instrumentals, some crazy little things that never saw the light of day. And until the time that we came up with last night. But what happened was Estelle Axton, I don't know if she saw any talent there or what she saw, but she liked me enough to keep me around, and she put me to work in her record shop. And I sold records. That's what I did. And I kept working on the weekends. I would kind of do a little A&Ring because people were always coming in. And on Saturdays, I would hold auditions because people were always bringing in songs and all that. And that's sort of how I got started, you know, in the A&R thing. And finally, Jim said, wait a minute. He said, Steve's spending more time in the studio and he is in the record shop and whatever. And so they got together and decided that I would be start getting my salary from the record company rather than the record shop. And I started working, I guess, A&R full-time at that point.
Well, you, with the group Booker T and the MGs, had the hit of Green Onions, and I think mm-hmm. this was a big hit, and it helped out Stax Records a lot. How did the four of you, Booker T, Al Jackson, Donald Duck Dunn, and yourself get to play together and become the house rhythm section?
Well, what it all stemmed from basically was there we were with all this great success doing the Dick Clark Show and everything as the Marquees, and we had this big hit record last night, and it was a lot of fun. And then all of a sudden it wasn't fun anymore. It became work and what you call a road burdened and that sort of thing, and seven of us or eight of us traveling in one car and trying to make all these shows. And I found out that I wasn't too happy with the road. And so what I really wanted to do was get back in the studio. I mean, I'd already knew that that's what I wanted to do. Anyway, that's what I did. I came back to Memphis. I went to work in the studio again. I helped put together the rhythm section. I found out I'd been playing with another band called the Club Handy Band, and we had done some sessions for Don Robey. I don't even remember which songs, but I played on the Five Blind Boys albums. I played on Al T&T Braggs. I think there was some Bobby Blue Bland stuff that I played on. But I played with a lot of those musicians, and we were asking around to find out who was a real good keyboard player. We had used several, and they said, there's this kid, he's still in school, named Booker T. Jones, and he's incredible. And they had worked with him on a lot of other stuff and on stage as well. And so we got Booker over on a session, and everybody just fell in love with him.
Let me play some of Green Onions, and because we're only going to play an excerpt, I'm going to start this a little in because I want to get to your guitar solo in it. So this is Green Onions, Booker T and the MGs. We'll hear more of our interview with Steve Cropper after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our 1990 interview with Steve Cropper. He worked as a songwriter, producer, and house guitarist for the Memphis soul label Stax Records. The Stax Museum of American Soul Music just opened on the site of the label's studio. I want to ask you about some of the now classic records that you played on. Some of these are songs that you co-wrote. You co-wrote Dock of the Bay with Otis Redding, and you produced the record as well, right?
Right, correct.
What was your collaboration with him like when it came to writing songs?
Well, of course, we wrote a lot of songs together. The inception of Dock at the Bay was really no different than any other one. Otis was one of those kind of guys who had 100 ideas, and he always had with him, anytime he came in to record, 10 or 15 different pretty good ideas, either intros or titles or whatever. And he had been in San Francisco doing the Fillmore. And the story that I got, he had rented a boathouse or stayed out at a boathouse or something. And that's when he got the idea of watching the ships come in the bay there. And that's about all he had. I watched the ships come in, watch them roll away again, and I'm sitting on the dock of the bay. And I just took that. We just sat down, and I just kind of learned the changes that he was kind of running over. And I finished the lyrics. And if you listen to songs that I collaborated with Otis, most of the lyrics are about him. Well, he never really... He might say the big O in a song or something like that, but Otis didn't really write about himself, but I did. Songs like Mr. Pitiful, Sad Song Fa-Fa, they were all about Otis and Otis's life, and Dock of the Bay is exactly that. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay. It was all about him going out to San Francisco to perform. And that's kind of the way I wrote with Otis. I wrote the bridge and stuff like that. And that's the way we collaborated. He trusted me. I always seemed to do the things that he liked, worked on songs that came out the way he wanted them. And I also worked on a lot of songs with Otis, arrangement-wise, and helped him put them together and all that, where I didn't, claim any writers or anything, because it wasn't necessary. Otis had most of it finished to begin with, and I just helped him do it. But a lot of these things where he had just bits and pieces, I would actually put them together, and we'd make whole songs out of them and go in the next day and record them. So we had a lot of fun together. Otis was a great guy to work with, and he was a great friend.
Well, let's listen to the record. This is Dock of the Bay.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm just sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay, 'cause I've had nothing to live for, and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Sitting on the dock of a bay, wasting time. Look like nothing's gonna change. Everything still remains the same. I can't do what 10 people tell me to do, so I guess I'll remain the same. Listen, sitting here resting my bones, and this loneliness won't leave me alone. Listen, 2,000 miles I roam, just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of a bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, sitting on the dock of a bay, wasting time.
Dock of the Bay, recorded by Otis Redding in 1967. Redding co-wrote the song with Steve Cropper. Cropper told me it was his idea to mix in the sound of the waves.
Atlantic said they were a little too loud, but I stuck in there. I kept them in. I thought the birds in the ocean was great.
I want to ask you about another record. And this is also a song you co-wrote. You co-wrote this one with Wilson Pickett, and it's Midnight Hour.
Uh-huh.
This was, I think, for the first session that you played with Wilson Pickett.
Right, it was.
Tell me about writing the song with him.
Well, it's real simple. We knew that he was coming down, and, of course, my connection with the record shop. And I went up and found some stuff that he had sung on. Of course, he sang, you know, with the Falcons, and he had sang some spiritual things. And it seemed like every time that he sang lead on something, when he got down to the fade-out, he would go, oh, wait till the midnight hour. Whoa, see my Jesus in the midnight hour. And all this, I said, that's the guy's ID. So I just took that right there and presented it to him with a little idea. He had a couple ideas, and what happened was that we picked him up at the airport. They dropped us off at the hotel, and Jerry Wexler and Jim Stewart went out to get something to eat and just talk business. And when they came back, I don't know, it was a couple hours later, we had In the Midnight Hour written, and don't fight it. They said, we're going to get out of here, let you guys keep going. And they left, and we wrote a thing called I'm Not Tired. And we went in the studio the next day, recorded all three songs, and all three songs were hits.
Steve Cropper recorded in 1990. The Stax Museum of American Soul Music just opened on the site of the Stax Records Studios. More soul music in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. Here's Wilson Pickett.